It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we are pulling back the curtain on the costs in the emergency room. A trip to the emergency room is expensive, and if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Even for routine procedures, it can be something that will make your eyeballs pop when you see that bill. Why are these bills so big? Today, the third installment in our examination of hospital ER costs. If you remember and were with us, our series on hospital emergency room costs has looked at how hospitals determine the price of certain items and procedures. We also discovered this term super users, people who frequent Iowa's emergency rooms more than 15 times a year. That was last time. Today, we close our three-part series by examining how insurance plays into the cost of an ER visit. We'll find out how insurance companies negotiate and how those negotiations play into what you pay for an ER visit. We'll also look at how Iowa's insurance landscape may change through the Affordable Care Act. And we want to reach out to you, listeners, this hour. Have you been in a position where you had to negotiate a hospital bill because of an emergency room visit? We want you to tell us your story this hour. Let us know your questions as well. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. First of all, we want to have you meet Joe LaValle. He's been on our program before, joining us in our Des Moines studio, Mercy Hospital's Senior Vice President of Planning and Advocacy. Joe LaValle, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a great privilege to be with you.
On our phone, Andrew Fitch joins us, head of consumer engagement at an organization called NerdWallet Health. Hi, Andrew. Andrew, are you there? Well, I'm sure we'll get Andrew in just a moment. NerdWallet Health is an organization that helps patients make smarter decisions and save money on their health care. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, thank you for having me, Ben.
Thank you, and glad we got that connection there. Let's start off with the two of you, Andrew and Joel. This is something that we always wonder about, at least I do, when you get a bill in the mail. Joel LaValle, how do insurance companies negotiate with hospitals to get that bill that the patient or the consumer receives? We see the price of the procedure, then we see a substantial amount lopped off if you're covered by Wellmark, for instance, and then you have the price there. How does that happen?
Well, I tell you, the hospital and the insurance companies typically contract annually with each other. But one of the key points I'd like to make, Ben, is there's been a lot of national publicity about how in some hospitals the uninsured pay more because they don't have the benefit of that negotiated insurance rate. Back in 2007, the board of directors at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines initiated what they called the Fulfilling the Mission Project. And in that 2007 effort, they expanded our charity care policy to make sure that we were doing a good job of providing care to the uninsured. And the second thing they did was changed our policy so that all uninsured get the same negotiated rate as the average rate that we give insurance companies. So even if you come to Mercy with no insurance, you get a 62% discount off your bill.
Yes.
Right off the top, because you get the same as the average discount given to insurers.
So what are you saying no one pays that top rate that is on the bill?
That's right.
Why is it there?
Well, you know, it's a bizarre anomaly of how our healthcare system has evolved. But you're right. I've often told our elected officials that prices really have gotten to the point where they don't matter very much, because most of our rates are set for us. Hospitals typically don't control their rates. Medicare establishes what it will pay you. Medicaid tells you what it will pay you. And Wellmark tells us what they will pay us. And so the most rates are set by those insurance relationships.
Okay, so that figure is pulled out of, I mean, for you at Mercy in Des Moines, that figure is what? How should we interpret that? The actual cost of the procedure? How do you come up with, if it's $276. Where does that $276, how do you arrive at that?
Yeah, I'm not the expert on the technical processes behind the scenes, but I know this overall, our finance department looks at our charges, our net revenues after these discounts, and our costs each year, and we strive to achieve, when everything's said and done, somewhere between a 3 and 4% bottom line so that we have some money left over to reinvest in equipment and services and expansion. Right now, we're struggling to achieve that. In the current economic environment, it's very difficult to make an adequate bottom line. But when we look at prices, they're typically driven by those broad issues. Are we achieving the economic playing field we need to in order to meet the needs of the people we serve?
Okay, certainly a lot more than if you were a retailer, more complicated than if you were a retailer selling candy bars and you could buy them for 40 cents a piece and sell them for a dollar a piece. You would have a much simpler equation. Andrew Fitch, head of consumer engagement at NerdWallet Health. Give us your take, your insights on how these costs are arrived at and how we as consumers do save money. That's the point of your organization.
Absolutely. So Joel is really spot on. This the list price you see on your bill really is kind of a bizarre outcome of how our healthcare system has emerged over time. The fact that bill charges are so large, so eye-popping, stems in large part from the way our country reimburses medical care. So going back in time, the original premise behind, HMO plans and managed care contracting was for hospitals to offer certain health plans a discount off of those charges in exchange for, the funneling of those health plans members to the hospital. What happened is that over time, this kind of turned into a cat-and-mouse game between, hospitals and providers on one side, insurance companies on the other, where hospitals would raise their prices in order to maximize reimbursement, while insurance companies kept seeking steeper discounts. So over time, the list price has lost sort of its connection to the true cost of care.
So what we're talking about is something very, very similar to what happens when you buy a used car. Andrew.
Yeah, that's very often an analogy that's used in the healthcare system, where you don't have an understanding of what the true cost actually is. It is also important to note that hospital charges are larger than the true costs of providing that care, because they have to account for certain intangibles in providing that care. You're paying for the salaries of nurses, the capital costs of the infrastructure. All that gets factored into the $20 pill for aspirin.
Okay, well, I'd like to have the two of you react to a couple of listeners who sent in their examples. We reached out as a part of this series and received over 30 people who got back to us with their cases of emergency room bills. Let's hear from an IPR listener who struggled with the negotiation process firsthand. This story comes from a listener in Dubuque. He asked to remain anonymous. His wife was recovering from a double mastectomy, and she was worried about suffering from an infection. They were told they could not be treated in Dubuque. They had to go to Iowa City in an emergency room in Iowa City, so they went to the University of Iowa Hospital's emergency department to get treatment. They expected to pay $750. His wife was fine, and after the visit, they received a partial bill for a $1,300 range. Weeks later, though, a second bill came for another $2,000. A bill came for a total of $2,000. This price seemed high, so he decided to investigate the bill's cost himself. Here's the story from there.
And the explanation was, well, this was the difference in the procedure being done in the emergency room and in the clinic that where the doctor was. Well, ultimately, it was the same procedure. The ultrasound was read by the clinic doctor, which they put online. The clinic doctor was called, and he looked at it and said, no, this is fine. And so I decided to push that issue with the customer service rep there at Iowa. And I said, I want to talk to somebody who makes these decisions, because that we're already paying for the extra services in this bill that are in the emergency room. Why would we be getting double charged for a procedure that is the same procedure and was read by the doctor, clinician? Well, they pursued that, and came back and said, well, that is the charge that's been negotiated with UnitedHealthcare, your insurer, and that's the deal. We can't do anything about that. And I said, well, I want to talk to somebody who negotiates that deal then. They went back, said, we'll call you back. They did. And they said, well, you can't do that because the people who negotiate those deals are, in effect, it's a secret group that you don't have access to. And I explained at that time, you know, what you and supposedly the insurance companies and the employers and the whole system is trying to do is get the consumer to be intelligent in its decision-making about healthcare. How can I, as a consumer, make any intelligent decision here? I have no information. And when I pursue the information, I'm told that it's being put together by a secret group. And I have no influence on the people who are making the decision, let alone I had no idea that it was going to be a $2,000 bill, not a $750 bill. And then when I get into looking at the charges, I'm being have surcharges on there that make no sense just to make the bottom line work for the department, or I don't know why, quite frankly. But anyhow, that was what really irritated me. And they said, well, you can appeal this. And by that time, I was so I had other things in life to do. And so they said, we will put it on a time payment plan. Well, so we are still paying for this emergency procedure 2 years out. And that's the story.
Okay. Thanks to our anonymous listener who wishes to remain anonymous from Dubuque for telling us about that story in the ER. Andrew Fitch, we get a sense there of what you run up against, and it's incredible there. What could this person have done better to negotiate this bill more effectively? It seems like he asked a lot of the right questions and posed the dilemma that all of us have if we would try to get behind these bills and find out why these numbers appear the way they do.
Yeah, you know, that really is the number one piece of advice I give to people is to ask for help and to keep asking questions along the way. As the listener, you know, correctly pointed out, the administrative and pricing side of healthcare is a very complex, murky, and confusing system that really was never designed with the patient in mind. It really is a case where patients don't know what they don't know, and many don't realize what options they should be pursuing for resolving unpaid medical bills. And, you know, even people with insurance are finding themselves with really high medical bills, and they're not exactly sure how to go about either appealing with their insurance carrier to make sure their benefits were applied correctly or, you know, seeking the various financial aid options available at hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Joe LaValle, when you hear that story, this happened at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, but could this sort of thing have happened at Mercy Hospital in Des Moines, where you question what's behind the more than doubling of a bill in the ER and get really no answers?
Well, obviously, Ben, I hope when folks contact us, we provide the answers they're seeking. I would not presume to try to speak about providers in Dubuque or in Iowa City. I know two of those organizations, and I know there's a lot of great people trying to do great things in those organizations. But the fundamental issue is absolutely true. Hospital care is more expensive than care in clinics, and for good reasons. Hospitals are open 24 hours a day. We have huge infrastructure costs related to providing 24-hour care in literally tens of thousands of different products and services. And that's a very expensive enterprise.
Mm-hmm. But the point that our Dubuque listener made is we want to be wise consumers in all things, including healthcare. And if we cannot question what's behind a bill, get it itemized in a way that makes sense to a consumer, how are we to be wiser with these decisions, Joe?
Yeah, no, I think if you ask in advance of the insurance counselors or the folks at Mercy, for example, who are there to help you with your financial issues. We have counselors. We have 8 or 9 people on our staff whose job it is to help people with these questions. Okay. They will give you that advice, and we certainly, Mercy runs both clinics and hospitals, and there are, it's not only the difference in the underlying cost, but the difference in the insurance benefit design. Many people's insurance benefits pay differently for hospital care than they do for clinic care, co-pays versus your annual deductible, for example.
Okay. We want to hear a story before we come to a break in our story from another Iowa Public Radio listener related to insurance adjustments. This is Ron Smith from Indianola chatting with our producer, Emily Woodbury.
Last September, my wife and I woke up and there was a bat flying around our bedroom. And we were lucky enough to have it, and we took it to the Iowa Department of Health to be tested. And the test came back inconclusive, which means they couldn't tell if it had rabies or not. So they highly recommended that we receive rabies vaccinations.
Sure, because that's scary. That's something that you need to take care of right away, correct?
We did have a few days, since we didn't have a specific bite that they could point to. I guess bat bites are very subtle, and you really don't know if you've been bitten or not. So they always err on the side of having vaccinations. But so I did have a few days to investigate. I called the insurance company and asked if we were covered, and they said that we were. And they encouraged us to go to our local clinic where we would have a $25 deductible or a $25 copay. And I called the local clinic, and they said they did not give rabies shots and referred me to Iowa Methodist, and called around some several other places, and I called the Iowa Department of Health back, and everyone just kept referring us to the emergency room.
Okay, so you go to the hospital, you have this, you know, you're being safe, nothing's for sure, but potentially, you know, this fatal disease that you need a vaccination to, you know, ward off if you did get bitten by the bat. So you go get the shots, and then you come away from it, receive a bill from the hospital. What did that look like?
Well, the total bill for both of us was $24,240, which was pretty shocking.
Yeah, that's a pretty big bill. Did you ask about it? Did you investigate those costs on your own a little bit?
You know, I did ask before we had the treatment or the shots, how much it was going to cost, and no one could ever tell us. We, you know, it was very, all we heard was, oh, they're sort of expensive, but we didn't hear it's going to be over $20,000 or anything like that.
Mm.
I did call the hospital, and I called the insurance company, and really got nowhere. The insurance write-off was $17,627. So the insurance company got a discount of that. And the insurance company paid $2,135. And we had $2,000 deductible. So we paid, well, and then we paid a certain percentage after that, which was $4,482. If we had been able to obtain the services at our local clinic, it would have cost us about $200.
So, Ron, after this experience, you know, you don't have rabies now. You got the vaccination. You're doing well. But what questions do you have about your bill?
Well, we were really fortunate. First of all, we didn't get rabies. And second of all, we did have insurance. And third, you know, we were able to pay the deductibles. But the big question or the general question is, why did it cost so much? And more specifically, if the hospital is a not-for-profit corporation and the original bill of $24,000 reflects their actual costs and expenses, how could they afford a $17,000 loss after the insurance company write-off? And I guess the other side of that is if the $24,000 bill doesn't reflect their actual costs and expenses, how can they justify a $17,000 profit from someone who's uninsured?
Okay, thanks to Ron Smith, a listener in Indianola, sharing that shocking story of the more than $24,000 rabies vaccination after an encounter with a bat. Andrew Fitch, head of consumer engagement at NerdWallet, Health, an organization that helps patients make smarter decisions and save money on their health care. How often do you hear such a story?
All the time. You know, it's really, there's so much confusion about how hospital pricing works. And, you know, you think when you see a dollar amount listed as a charge that, you know, that should be what it costs roughly with a reasonable profit. But that, as we were talking about earlier in the show, it's really not a reflection of the costs. And, you know, as consumers become more engaged and are asked to participate more in the finance side of their healthcare decisions, we really need to think about, you know, how do we help consumers understand what goes into a hospital bill and the difference, you know, in, you know, getting care at your clinic versus, you know, an outpatient department versus an inpatient hospital.
Unity Point Hospital declined to come on our show, so they're not going to comment about it. But Joe LaValle, you've heard this Ron Smith bat encounter story. How are we to hear a story like this and not feel as consumers we're being taken for a ride, and a big one?
Well, again, Ben, I certainly can't speak and wouldn't presume to speak for Unity Point or Methodist. The point I want to emphasize is that, again, at Mercy, the policy is that $17,000 write-off would have happened for anyone, whether insurance or not. So it's so hard for people to understand the complexities of this, but the fact is you need to look at that price number as really just a phantom number.
I have to laugh because we come back to the same question. Why is it
exactly
there?
Exactly. And you know what?
What does it reflect? Does it reflect nothing? What is the phantom there for?
Yeah, I think one of the primary reasons it's reported at all is because the insurance companies like to show their customers the discount that they get.
I see. It's like buying the shirt in the store. You want to see it's 50% off
before
you buy it.
And I think, you know, Mercy'd be perfectly happy if that original charge number, which is pretty meaningless, never showed up. Show what the actual payment from the insurance company was. Show what the balance due to the patient is. It would be simpler. But
Joe LaValle, we have to take a break. We're going to have you continue on with our show of Mercy Hospital in Des Moines. Andrew Fitch, head of consumer engagement at NerdWallet Health. When we come back, Dan Shane will join us of the University of Iowa. We'll also talk with the CEO of Co-Opportunity. It's the only nonprofit health insurance co-op in Iowa. Mike Fay will be with us of Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield. Join us with your questions, your comments, your experiences. 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. It's River to River. Once again, exploring emergency room costs. Back in just a moment. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As we pull back the curtain on costs in our emergency rooms, trying to find out where these numbers come from, how the final price is negotiated between your health insurance company and the health care provider. We have all kinds of things popping out of the closet. We have phantoms, we have vaccinations that cost over $24,000 if you listened to our first half hour. With us, Joe LaValle, Mercy Hospital in Des Moines, Senior Vice President of Planning and Advocacy. Also, Andrew Fitch by phone, Head of Consumer Engagement at NerdWallet Health. And if you'd like to join us, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your experience in the ER with the costs, your negotiations, and your questions. Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Andrew Fitch and Joe LaValle, let's talk a few minutes, a couple minutes before we introduce a couple of other guests here. Let's talk about the uninsured for a moment. Andrew Fitch, how are the uninsured affected by this system with these enormous phantom figures out front?
Unfortunately, they're the ones faced with that enormous phantom figure first off, right off the bat. So it can be a very daunting number to face. And really what they have to do is get over the sticker shock and make sure to stay organized and keep track of all their bills, because there's probably going to be multiple of them. And then they go start asking questions and asking for help. You know, one of the first things I recommend is to ask about your hospital's financial aid program. Almost all hospitals have these. Some are more generous than others, but they can extend up to 350% or 400% of the federal poverty level, which is pretty high. So that's one avenue for the uninsured.
Joe LaVallee, let's take the example of the vaccination for the rabies shot. What would happen if you had an uninsured person at the hospital? This did not happen, be clear. This did not happen at Mercy in Des Moines. But let's say for any procedure, there's an uninsured person, a rather large bill to pay. What do you recommend that uninsured person do after receiving treatment and receiving a bill that is just not payable?
Yeah, Ben, it's a great question. And I think what your listeners really need to understand, every person who comes into Mercy who's uninsured is offered counseling. And we have this staff of people I mentioned who spend their time making sure that the uninsured person understands what they might be eligible for, gets signed up for insurance either through traditional channels or through the insurance exchanges, the marketplace that's available as a result of the Affordable Care Act. There are, as Andrew mentioned, we have a generous charity care policy, and Mercy certainly stands ready to help people who can't afford to pay. I just checked this morning, we've done counseling and helped screen and get 2,400 people signed up for whatever they're eligible for since in the first 3 months of this year, 2,400 people that our staff helped. And again, we're not the only ones. Many hospitals have these people that are doing that work every day. So everybody who comes in without insurance should ask for help, will get help, and we're proud to do it. We take our Christian ministry very seriously. The Sisters of Mercy founded Mercy in Des Moines in 1893, and we've never wavered from that commitment to help people who need our help.
Okay, Joe LaVallee of Mercy in Des Moines. Let's talk to Dan Shane. He's assistant professor in the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. Hi, Dan.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
You've been holding our hand, so to speak, as we transition through Obamacare becoming the law of the land. You've been listening to the first half-hour conversation. Remind us of what Iowa's health insurance landscape looks like, first of all.
Certainly. Well, the companies that decided to join and offer insurance as part of the health exchanges, which again offered consumers another avenue, and particularly important for the consumers who had incomes below 400% of the federal poverty level, that they were eligible for tax credits. So it offered consumers typically a much lower cost avenue for getting coverage with those tax credits, something that would not have been available previously.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And certainly we're interested in understanding, of course, in the context of this discussion of emergency departments, how will those individuals who now may have health insurance, how will that change their utilization of the emergency department?
But when we look at the state as a whole, most people in Iowa, when they have health insurance, are insured by Wellmark, Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Absolutely, absolutely.
1.8 million Iowans, more than 300,000 South Dakotans adding to that. Let's introduce also Mike Fay. He's the Vice President of Health Networks at Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield, joining us by phone. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. So you've been, I'm not sure how much of the program you've heard here before, but when you go to bargain, give us your perspective as a health insurance provider in that bargaining situation when we have these enormous emergency room costs. What does it look like from your perspective?
I think the way to think about it is that we're going out to contract at rates for all of the services provided in a hospital. We don't go out just to focus on the emergency room. So we're looking at, you know, inpatient hospitalizations, other outpatient services. So our contracts with all the hospitals in Iowa are the same. We have the same contract language. We've adopted over the last probably 10 to 15 years what we call fixed rates. So we don't utilize the hospital's charges. We've used data that has been provided that they submit to Medicare, and we come up with a rate for services that we pay and offer to pay, and they can agree to be part of our network or not.
So, and you've got quite a bit of leverage with 1.8 million Iowans. They pretty much take what you say, I would guess.
I would say we sort of negotiate in the aggregate. We do get feedback about certain types of things, services, technology get introduced, that certain costs change. But we do try to provide, you know, a cost-based approach.
What kind of attention do you pay to the initial figure that the hospital may put forward? We had the example of a $24,000 rabies vaccination. Do you pay any mind to that initial figure?
No, we actually ignore it.
You ignore it completely?
Yes.
Okay. Dan Shane, give us an idea of when Iowa is the effect of having such a highly concentrated individual insurance market mostly in the hands of one company.
Well, it's interesting. Typically, economists think that concentration is going to lead to higher costs for consumers. And in most situations, it works that way. But we have to keep in mind that one of the other pieces of the Affordable Care Act and health reform is leading to an increase in the concentration of providers as well. So accountable care organizations is sort of pushing in the other direction. And we have to be very cognizant of, on the one hand, we might think it's an improvement to see lots of new competitors in terms of health insurance companies. And we would and certainly like to see more of that. But in terms of these negotiations that we're talking about, it certainly wouldn't be feasible to have, you know, a bunch of brand new insurance companies that have very little leverage trying to bargain with very large and growing providers. So in that case,
you're saying they couldn't get the savings that Wellmark could get now.
Absolutely not. So in that case, you know, Iowans, if we're talking about equal sized giants, we might actually be better off for Iowa consumers.
Let's talk with David Lyons. David Lyons is with Co-Opportunity. He's the CEO. It's the only nonprofit health insurance co-op in Iowa. Now, these have popped up as part of our new landscape, health insurance exchanges. David Lyons, welcome to our program.
Great to be with you, Ben.
Great to have you with us. Now, you're a nonprofit operating in Iowa and also in Nebraska, as I understand it, the only nonprofit health insurance co-op in Iowa. Tell us who you are. Introduce us introduce yourself to us.
Sure. Co-Opportunity Health is a consumer-operated and oriented plan. That's just shorthand for saying if you think of credit unions to banks or rural electric cooperatives to Con Edison or farmer grain co-ops to ConAgra Industries, we are that to the traditional health insurance industry. Member-owned, member-governed, a lot of what's been talked about today, Ben, is right in the middle of an important conversation that you're bringing forward. You know, the past used to be about, you know, discounts off of bills and large numbers and who had bargaining power. The future is about shared savings and shared goals and total cost of care, where providers are reimbursed as much for keeping somebody healthy as they are for treating them in emergency room.
So how does your business model look different than what we've had in the past here in Iowa?
Our business model is a little different in a couple of ways. First of all, it supports the provider and the patient relationship as a nonprofit. We cannot spend our money or save our money for anything other than compensating members who are seeing their providers. So, for example, we don't put barriers in front of people to see providers. We want them to see their providers so their care can be managed. So we have programs, for example, 3 for free. Pretty easy to figure out what that costs when you say, oh, okay, so I can see my provider 3 times a year for free. With the emergency room, perfect example of where things are changing is, in the past, it used to be the carriers and the hospitals would argue about costs in the emergency room. Today, we're in sync. We work to make sure that people who don't need to be in the emergency room aren't in the emergency room, and those that need to be in the emergency room are. Mm-hmm. So, for example, it looks expensive if I go to an emergency room, I have this big deductible, but it's waived and I don't pay it if I'm admitted because I did need to be in the emergency room. However, if I don't go to the emergency room and I use some other mechanism, I work with my provider, I work with my carrier to go to an outpatient versus an inpatient, or go to an office visit versus an outpatient, or God forbid, to practice prevention so I don't have to see the doctor at all. The key is to compensate the members, give them the information, and reward them financially when they do that.
David Lyons, we want to mention your other credentials here besides your present position as CEO of Co-Opportunity. Your former insurance commissioner for the state of Iowa, also Iowa's former director of economic development and the chief business development officer for the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation. I wanted to mention that in there as well. Let's go to one of our callers, Cedar Rapids. Nathan is standing by. Hi, Nathan. You have an emergency have an emergency room story. We're running out of time, so the brief version, sure, if you could.
Okay. So I went to I took my daughter in to the emergency room. She had just a small nursemaid's elbow. I ended up getting three bills, one for the doctors, one for a triage, and one for the emergency room visit. My insurance actually paid more than what the bill was for because they had told me it was a negotiated rate. And the hospital came back because my deductible was different, and they asked me again for more money. It just was an interesting situation.
Mm. Andrew Fitch, you run into situations like this?
Yeah, and a lot of that's going to go back to the contract between the insurance carrier and the hospital where you were treated in the ER to see if, you know, sometimes there's language limiting reimbursement to the bill charges. Other times there's no limit, in which case they're just paying the pre-negotiated rate for that ER visit, and your deductible and all the cost sharing still applies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Nathan, for your experience calling from Cedar Rapids. Let's make sure we devote the rest of the hour to the changes coming our way, presently happening with the Affordable Care Act as we transition into that. Now, Iowa is allowing policies that don't comply with the Affordable Care Act standards to be extended until October 1st, 2016. Dan Shane, tell us what that is.
This is, again, trying to minimize, so to speak, the disruptions in the individual private or non-group market. So for folks who aren't getting their insurance through their employers who already had policies through Wellmark or other providers, that just trying to minimize that transition. So there's another year, essentially, that those policies can stay in effect if they aren't compliant, which means that some of the benefits may not comply with what the ACA. So the ACA requires that there's no cost to individuals for certain types of preventive care use, certain maximums in terms of deductibles, individual and family deductibles. So there's another year where non-compliant or grandfathered policies can stay in effect.
Dan, I understand. Just a moment. I understand, Dan, you, looking at Oregon and Massachusetts, those are a couple of things that we can learn from or can be predictive for us?
Certainly. Again, we're very interested in understanding, and this builds on David Lyons' points about how how we can orient behaviors in towards more healthy and reduce non-necessary use of the emergency department. And again, Massachusetts has had a health reform expansion that looks very much like the Affordable Care Act. And as a result of expanding insurance, particularly to low-income consumers, they actually saw a reduction of about 8% in emergency department use.
Okay, let's go to Mike Fay. We're running out of time. I want to get your reaction, your prediction on how health care for Iowans will change under the Affordable Care Act as we move forward.
Well, I think the goal is to get more people to have coverage. And so with more people having coverage, hopefully less people would be uninsured and having to run into those situations where they have to individually negotiate, you know, their care and the cost of their care with the providers of care.
Mm-hmm. Okay. David Lyons of Co-Opportunity, how do you see yourself existing next to this behemoth Wellmark? Are you looking for a specific niche consumer of health insurance, or are you competing one-to-one with Wellmark?
Ben, our job is to increase competition, choice, and innovation in the marketplace. We do present policies to folks buying on the federal marketplace, but we sell individual and small group and large group policies separately. We are not an 800-pound gorilla, but with 77,000 members in Iowa, and again, it's members, not insureds, it is really going very well. We do have an opportunity to be able to help in the transition. We're providing competition as one of only two statewide providers for the Iowa marketplace for federal coverage this year and in Nebraska as well. And our goal is to be able to help shift what CARE is doing under the ACA for health insurers. It changes everything for health insurers. It tells them to get out of the business of identifying and avoiding risk and get into the business of identifying and managing risks by working with their member consumers and their providers.
Mm-hmm.
And one point I'd put out there, you know, I know the easy answer about non-compliant plans is that it minimizes short-term disruption, but it maximizes long-term market volatility. I mean, I have great respect for President Obama and great respect for Governor Branstad, but on this one, I disagree with them. You create a marketplace where some people are in a pool that can be health underwritten and priced based on age and gender and pre-existing conditions, and some people are going to be in a policy where you can't be priced that way. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that people are going to adversely select one pool against the other. The other issue is that consumers have three big risks. They may be in non-compliant policies that treat them personally different. You know, I hurt my back when I was younger. I went through health underwriting. I have a spine rider. If I stay in that old policy and I go into the hospital, I'm not going to be covered for risks relating to my spine. So they need to check that. They also need to check that the policies are up to date on coverage. A lot of old policies don't have maternity, they don't have mental health, they don't have preventative care. Those are some pretty important coverages and a lot of out-of-pocket costs. And the third is that Iowa is one of the lowest participating states using the federal cost share available through marketplace, through the Iowa federal marketplace. And by that, it means literally tens of thousands of Iowans qualified for federal cost share to reduce their insurance premiums, and they didn't take it because they stayed in the old non-qualified policies.
Okay, David Lyons, I want to give Mike Fay of Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield a chance there to react to what you said, or also just tell us, Mike Fay, how you see it going forward, existing with this new entity, Co-Opportunity, as a nonprofit health insurance co-op.
Well, I mean, I think the marketplace, you know, customers are going to have to make, you know, decisions about choices of products and prices and benefits that are important to them and their family. And so I think the reality is there are going to be people who are better off looking at ACA-compliant products, and there are people who will be better off to stay with what they have. And I think the fact that the states have given them that flexibility to pick either one of those is the best for those people to make that decision.
Mm-hmm. David Lyons, do you see the number of visits to the ER going down because of the changes we're going through in the ACA?
Yes, we are, actually. And I see some of the innovative products and programs being put together by carriers and providers helping our members reduce emergency care even more in the future. I'm particularly excited about some innovations around chronic disease management where people don't have to end up in the emergency room if their care is known and managed well between the carrier and the provider before they crash.
Okay, you've been – yeah. Who wants to join in?
Well, this is Joe LaValle from Mercy.
And okay, Joe, yes.
If time allows, I can give a quick
example. We have less than a minute.
Okay. It hits the road in the clinics. So we're in shared savings programs with Co-Opportunity, with Medicare, and with Wellmark. And what that means is when we proactively work with our patients in the clinics to help them be healthier, there's finally an economic model that rewards us for doing the right thing. So the big sea change here is that providers and insurers working together finally have an incentive to keep you healthy and lower your costs instead of just encouraging you to do more and more.
Mm-hmm.
That is the real win in this whole situation.
Dan Shane, very quickly, I can give you 20 seconds. Do you see that sort of shift, huge shift in our healthcare providing?
There's certainly lots of what we might call small little experiments that are pushing in this direction and trying to orient the system away from this typical or traditional fee-for-service of doing more because we get reimbursed more and orienting more towards keeping people healthy and trying to reimburse for just that.
Dan Shane, Andrew Fitch, Joe LaValle, and David Lyons, as well as Mike Fay, thank you for joining us. We want to thank our IPR listeners who came with us with the IER stories and questions. 34 submissions. If you want to email us with any other issues we should investigate, you can always get in touch by going to investigatethis@iowapublicradio.org or email us, investigatethis@iowapublicradio.org. Thanks to Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, also help today from Charity Nebbe. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.